The resurrection of the dead, both of the just and the unjust, is how Paul expressed his belief before Felix and his accusers. For the last 7 days, we've been reminded of the amazing calling we have, the task before us, the task we are preparing for, the reconstruction of this planet after the trauma of Satan's rule, and all that's followed on from that. But this really only represents dealing with a relatively small number of the people who have lived. Today, on the last great day, what we have been preparing for the last 7 days, this is the whole point of everything that has been done for 1,000 years. Today is what that's all about. And we will go over that today. This day is for those people that at this time, or until this time, have not been made justified by God. The just. We are now dealing with the unjust. It's one of the ironies, you know, to call ourselves just when we know we are anything but. But by the sacrifice of Christ, and by accepting our need for his sacrifice and repenting of what we were, we have this opportunity as earthen vessels to change. Living in this culture, this society held captive by Satan, the false religions teach the immortality of the soul. Not that immortality is a gift of God, which of course is what we are told. And people claim and have trained from all the pagan beliefs, from the Babylonians, the Egyptians, the Greeks, all the way through, that within ourselves is this continuing life, and that just that the form changes. Then you, if you follow a particular religion, you are promised this blissful time in the presence of God forever and ever and ever. And if you scum don't believe what we tell you, you will rot in hell fire forever. That's just shows where I got brought up, doesn't it? And of course, the academics who arrogantly deny their creator and acknowledge only this short physical existence with no future hope at all. Make hay while the sun shines, you eat, drink, and be merry. That's not, we'll go there. We did eat, drink, and be merry, but we still have a future hope. The 12 apostles were witnesses of Christ's resurrection. And they gave their life, mainly, they gave their life, sticking to that story. If it was some huge scam, would you go through all they went through to make a few pounds, or a few denarii, or a few shekels? These men gave their lives, work, and died witnessing that Christ was resurrected. And he is called the firstborn of many brethren. Not a few brethren, many brethren. But still, even with all these promises, it is not always easy for us to picture the idea of death and resurrection, or a change and a resurrection. So I want us to consider part of God's physical creation, which gives a sort of hint, a tiny shadow, a glimmer of what will happen, only on a physical plane. But I think it's interesting that God has provided these physical things to help us to understand something, some great spiritual truth. With all analogies, we can't push them too far. Don't bother to turn there, but in your notes, put down in your notes, John 12, 24, verses 24, 25, 1 Corinthians 15, verses 35, basically to the end of the chapter. The analogy of a grain of wheat, the little grain of wheat, it does not live again unless it goes into the ground, dies, and is resurrected or reborn as a whole new grass, grain, multitudes of grain. But I don't want to concentrate on that. I want to concentrate on another analogy, the analogy of the lifestyle of an insect. We, as human beings, in the pride of life, not so much now, in view of my advancing age, which Mr. Munro so kindly reminded me, I must now have passed 1,000 years, and I don't feel a day younger than 1,200. We could look at, please, at Isaiah 41, verse 15. God, in our pride of life, when we were young, we used to be quite full of ourselves. And God reminds us of just what we are. In various places, we're called a heap of dirt. Dust on the scale. A drop in the bucket. A puff of smoke. A blade of grass. But in this one, we come up the food chain. We're a worm. Isaiah 41, verse 14. Fear not, you worm Jacob, and you men of Israel. I will help you. God is still prepared to help us, even though, from his perspective, we're nothing but worms. But because we're at the feast and we want to put the best spin possible on the circumstances, let's not think of ourselves as worms. Let's think of ourselves as grubs or caterpillars, the first stage of the life cycle of an insect. We, like these wee beasties, grub around frantically, eating. There are the pictures of the caterpillar going through the leaves. We've seen a lot of that this week, but it's not been cabbage leaves so much. It's more been fillet of beef or salmon steak. Sorry, fillet of beef for our guest. We live short, dangerous lives, or if you'll excuse the pun, in fact, a grubby little existence. As human beings, we look forward to dying, going back to the dust which we came from. The caterpillar goes to a secret place, dies, becomes a dried out husk, suspended in this little secret place, just as though they were in the grave. But amazingly, when their time is due, this dead chrysalis resurrects as a butterfly. Something so far apart from the grub. This butterfly emerges, spreads its wings, flutters around, unhampered, unrestrained, not stuck on one little leaf, able to travel seemingly effortlessly, a thing of complete beauty, the opposite of the worm. God has a future for us, and I think he has used this physical example to help us to grasp the idea of what is in front of us. What is man, this worm, that you are mindful of him? And yet nothing will be withheld. That's talking partly about Jesus Christ, but as his brothers, we are included in that incredible promise. In Ezekiel 34, be amazed if we don't see this one again today. Ezekiel 34, verses 12, 13, maybe 14. Therefore prophesy and say unto them, behold, my people, I will open your graves and cause you to come up out of your graves and bring you into the land of Israel, and you shall know that I am the Eternal when I have opened your graves and brought you up out of the graves, and shall put my spirit in you. We don't have the spirit to give ourselves immortal life. God has got to give us another gift for us to continue to live. And I shall place you in your own land. This is what we will be preparing, the land that these resurrected people at this time have not been justified. They, in many instances, didn't even know Jesus Christ existed. The only name by which they can be saved. God intends to plant the heavens. Until I met with this group, that scripture meant nothing to me. It was one of the things with the sort of more systematic and continuous training we've received over the last few years, that suddenly has become such an important part to us. And I've lost the scripture, haven't I? Let's look over in Isaiah 51 and be reminded of this. Isaiah 51, 16. And I have put my words in your mouth, and I have covered you in the shadow of my hand, that I may plant the heavens, colonize. When we think about Where will everyone go on this world when they come up for the great white throne judgment? The world will be reshaped to make that possible. But there is also a promise that the increase of Christ's government will have no end. It's not tied merely to the earth. This is going to be the beautiful centre of the universe. This will be the home base. But as Mr. Armstrong said in his book, Mystery of the Ages, this is only the beginning. The beginning. We are now preparing for the beginning. What an amazing, incredible promise God has held out for us. But not just for us, not just selfishly for us, because we happen to believe a narrow thing. The other people are not forgotten. All those people who have lived, died, and never known God or the promise, their time will come. God is no respecter of person. We are not his favourites. We are called now to do a job. It is amazing promises. So, take hope, worm Jacob. What an incredible plan God has for everyone.